Hello, and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, usually Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Ruveid Virk. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to have you here as well. So Ruveid is a first-generation Pakistani-American who started playing Pathfinder First Edition back in 2012. And since then, you've been freelancing starting in 2020, and you've published some things in the Bestiary 3, the back matter of the Fist of the Ruby Phoenix, Adventure Path, and also some items in Secrets of Magic, so stuff that has come out real recently. When he's not writing, running, or playing Pathfinder, Ruveid enjoys playing various video games, reading sci-fi and fantasy, or checking out whatever new hobby has caught his interest in that particular week. So what video games do you like to play?
Recently, I've been, for the last few years, rather, I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV, MMO. So I'm a big Final Fantasy fan. That's taken up a lot of my free time, but I'm also a huge Souls fan. So Dark Souls, Bloodborne.
Yeah, yeah.
Recently, I have been playing Ori and the Will of the Wisps. I haven't. I played the first one when that came out. That was really fun. A lot of those. Also, I really, really love deck building games like Slay the Spire.
Oh, yeah.
I've been playing that. And I just picked up a Loop Hero a couple days ago. That's been a lot of fun.
Not familiar with that. What's a Loop Hero?
It's essentially a deck building game. It's a deck builder meets like a roguelike. You go through like a dungeon in one big loop, but you lay down cards that that drop monsters or environmental interactives, and you get loot when you go around and you kill monsters, and there's like a boss at the end of each floor if you live long enough. It's very, very neat. It's a fun mix of deck builder and like a roguelike, kind of like Munchkin stuff.
Yep. Oh, very cool. So, Ruveid, can you talk about how you got started as a freelance writer in the first place? You know, kind of what was your journey like?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like my journey is admittedly a little bit on the tamer side of things. I saw a post one day on Twitter from Liz Liddell, formerly of Paizo, who had put out an open call for diversity authors. Though I hadn't really used Twitter all that much, I said, you know, I like Paizo, I like playing Pathfinder, I'm diverse, so I might as well try to respond to this and see what happens. And that got me my first writing gig with Paizo in Bestiary 3. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of just been one after another since then. So far, just with Paizo.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought about writing for anybody else?
I've definitely given it thought. It's not my primary source of income, so.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's you know, it's more something I've been doing in my free time, which I have a little bit more of very recently. So I'm beginning to think of branching out and looking at other avenues in addition to just you know, whatever I can get from Paizo. But it's definitely been really awesome so far working with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting to hear that that's how you got your start. I remember seeing that post that on Twitter Liz had posted. Actually, somebody else had pointed me to that through Facebook and said, oh, yeah, if anybody's interested, it's out. And lots of people had responded to that. And so I think it's nice to see that Paizo's kind of worked at that because, you know, I don't know about you, but myself as a person of color, I have a different perspective when I go to game stores and play or when I go to conventions and see folks. I don't see a lot of folks like myself there at the Paizo games. And I'm curious as to what your perspective is on that as well.
Yeah, I'd say my experience very, very similarly mirrors that. I haven't been to too many, like I haven't been to a PaizoCon yet, but when I do go out and play tabletops, or pre-pandemic at least, there weren't really many people that looked like me, and that's to say not just Pakistani or South Asians, just POC in general. Right. And I think it's a really weird like catch 22 phenomenon of like you don't see enough people like yourself, so you don't so some people might not feel comfortable joining the scene, which makes it so that other people, again, they don't see those people that are like themselves. So it's kind of this self-perpetuating cycle.
How did you get introduced to Pathfinder in the first place?
A friend of mine in college, he had been playing D&D since like third edition, and he's a huge Pathfinder guy, and I'd always been interested in the role playing games. I had heard a lot about them. I just never really had a group of people to play them with. Like I said, my family and my group of like Pakistani friends weren't really into the scene. I started hanging out with this friend in college, and he introduced me to the game, and it's the rest is history. I've been playing Pathfinder ever since.
Yeah, I mean, 9 years ago. So was that what starting with season, is that three you started with then?
So I didn't do a lot of PFS in the
Oh,
beginning.
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't start doing PFS until much later, actually. I started playing, actually the very first game that I remember playing was that same friend running Wrath of the Righteous.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I made a very fun scythe using Slayer as my very first Pathfinder character in an AP, and that ran for a few sessions before, life happened. But and then we just played more and more homebrew stuff and
Right.
some APs here and there from there.
Now, have you, prior to the pandemic, did you start getting into society play as well, or is that something that's not high on your list of things?
Yeah, very, very much so. So funny enough, 2020, but before the pandemic started, me and the same friend, we had made a plan to finally go out and hit all of the big cons and GM at
Yeah.
all of them
Oh,
for PFS. So we had like tickets and plans for PaizoCon and for Gen Con and for PAX East. And all that, pandemic happened, so that didn't happen. But I have been playing a lot of online PFS. I GM'd at the last PaizoCon. I GM'd at the last Gen Con. Me and that friend run a little PFS server that meets on Saturday mornings, and we run and host PFS scenarios now for PFF for Pathfinder 2E. So it's definitely been much higher on my list of things that I'm playing, because the scenario, the format really helps, I think, and is conducive to online play.
Yeah, for sure. I've GM'd quite a bit. Mostly I do Starfinder, but yeah, I agree. The length of the sections, and then the fact that everybody is, at home and has easy access to games all over the country now, quite
Oh yeah.
frankly, makes it very, very convenient there. So, you mentioned college and your friend here. One of the things I'll say is you and I have something in common. We both went to Michigan. I went to the Ann Arbor there for grad school, and got a couple degrees.
Awesome.
So I'm curious if you are a big Michigan fan.
I am a big Michigan fan in theory. I will say that football's not really my thing, but I'm out here rooting for Michigan when I can.
Yeah.
I've gone to a few games with my with like
Cool.
part members of my family. My uncle, he's a huge Michigan fan. He gets like the season tickets every year. He's got
Nice,
a whole
nice.
bunch of memorabilia. Yeah, I love Michigan, and even if I don't really vibe with football, I'm always rooting for him.
Yeah, it's you know, when I was there, I had season tickets because as a grad student, you can get them, and they're not the best of seats, but they're better than the undergrad seats anyway.
Oh yeah.
So, but yeah, it's just amazing to me when you walk into the stadium, because from the outside it doesn't look that big because half of it's buried underground, and you kind of walk in through one of the tunnels and the whole thing just opens up and it's just so massive. I always thought that was really cool.
It's a really, really cool place to be, you know, even if you're not a fan of the sport or whatever. It's just a really, really neat experience, I think. And I think being in there with like a crowd of fans and all of the energy that's there, and you know, the big house is in fact quite big. It's a really, really awesome experience.
Now, did you tailgate when you went there? Because the tailgating is really interesting at Michigan, different than other places.
I was part of one or two. You know, I don't like do what I do a lot of like a drinking or anything like that.
Sure,
so
sure.
You know, that part of the scene wasn't ever really my thing. But you know, like I said, the I was there for the experience, and there were definitely experiences.
Yeah, no, I guess the thing that's interesting for me is when we were there, and maybe it's changed over time, they don't have a lot of parking there. So you park in people's lawns outside the stadium, and then you have tailgates there outside on people's lawns outside the stadium.
Yep,
it's just
absolutely.
Huge, huge difference. I remember, you know, going like to an Ohio State game, and so you have a bunch of Ohio State fans there tailgating on somebody's lawn, you know, outside the stadium. It's just, it's way different than I'm a university professor, so I've also been at a couple other schools. I was at Oregon for a while. Tailgating is completely different at Oregon than it is at Michigan. So,
yeah, it's very cool. I haven't personally experienced you know, what tailgating is like in a lot of other universities, but it really is just hanging out on someone's lawn. You park there and you hang out and do what you're doing, and then you get to the stadium, because like you said, there's not nearly enough parking over there.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they didn't do it. I mean, you can park across the street, like at Pioneer High School, but that's the only real big areas, you know. So anyway, I was wondering, you know, you mentioned that you started playing first edition, and now you've been freelancing for second edition. What was that transition for you like, going from first edition to playing and writing for second edition? And what do you like about second edition, and maybe what don't you like about it as much that you'd rather have first edition stuff for it?
So I will say that getting my start with first edition was a good way of getting introduced to like the lore and the world of Galarian and everything. And you know, getting an idea for what kind of things, you know, Paizo was looking to do with the system. And I'm gonna be honest with you. Second edition, I love everything about it. I love the three action economy. I love the Lost Omens lore books that they're putting out. I am a huge proponent of I basically immediately switched from first edition to second edition with zero hesitation. I'm of the opinion that, like, you know, aside from like a very small number of things, with the amount of like work and product that Paizo has put out for second edition, you can play pretty much any class, any like option that you were wanting to do in first ed in second edition. I think it's a lot more intuitive the way that the three action system works. So a little bit more beginner friendly, but also a little more streamlined. Considering that I started my writing with second edition, the like nitty gritty of how the of how to come up with the mechanics and you know, what the balancing factors are and things like that, I started learning that based on the second edition stuff. So I didn't really write a whole lot of first edition anything. Like, I wrote some outlines for adventures and stuff, but nothing really like nothing really crazy. Or even close to what I've been doing with my freelancing in second edition. So, But First Ed was a really good introduction to the system. I am just a huge proponent of second edition for sure.
Yeah, I started playing with first edition as well, and actually did some GMing there. I like second edition way much. There's so much I like about it. In fact, a lot of the mechanics in there that they have, the three action economy, the crits, critical successes and failures, I hope that comes over to Starfinder, quite frankly. Those are things I really like a lot about it.
Yeah, Starfinder Second Edition would be really neat.
But you know, that's it's only 4 seasons old. They can't be looking at that yet. It's too soon.
Yeah, no, too soon, but not it's not it's never too soon to think about it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I love what I've played in Scene of Starfinder, which hasn't been a ton, admittedly. I've played a couple Starfinder Society scenarios, and those were a lot of fun. But I don't know the system nearly as well yet. But starships and mechs and future what it's a pretty cool setting.
Yeah, I think in terms of learning it, it's more akin to first edition Pathfinder than second edition. So it's a pretty easy transition for folks that are familiar with first edition, I think.
Yeah, because it still uses the 3.5 rule set, right? The
Right, right.
standard action, swift action,
Yep.
all that jazz. And so, if what you're familiar with is first set, I think it's a really good sort of in between of like 1E and 2E,
Right.
where you still have the action economy and the and a lot of the core mechanics from 1E, but a lot of the design philosophy mirrors that of what 2E is doing.
All right. So, can you tell me, do you have any advice for people who are aspiring RPG writers? So obviously not everyone's going to get a call that they can just submit something to. So what else can folks do, you know?
Well, this advice might sound like a little bit cliche, but if you want to write, then you should write. If what you want to be doing is writing adventures and writing tabletop stuff, you should work on that, and get stuff out to like Pathfinder Infinite is a thing. Submit to
Right.
Wayfinder. Have things ready. For your portfolio that you're able to show, so that if you do see something like an open call come in, then you have something ready to submit. And I think that if you don't have one already, you should get a Twitter, and follow a lot of these people and industries that work in the tabletop scene, because Twitter is the tabletop scene, and Twitter is very very active. And I was never a Twitter user myself up until that open call, and my activity has just like boomed up because you have all these people who are calling for authors of one kind or another, or advertising their projects or something, and a lot of that happens on Twitter. But ha having stuff ready that you can show, this is work that I've done. This is the stuff that I'm looking to do. Submitting it to something like Pathfinder Infinite, submitting to something like Wayfinder, working on like InDesigns or just anything like that, even self-publishing like small games or adventures. All of that is a really really good thing to have, so then you can advocate for yourself when you do see something like an open call come up. Go to conventions and network with people. Well, pre-pandemic at least. Current pandemic is a little different, but you network with people on, like I said, on Twitter, online, in forums, in these spheres where people are active and engaging. You can never have any shortage of contacts and communication, because one way or another, if you're active and you're putting yourself out there, then an opportunity is going to come up.
No, for sure, for sure. So, Ruvade, what kind of cool things are you working on now that you can talk about? Do you have any projects in the works?
NDA is looming over my shoulder right now, so there's some things coming up. As far as what I can talk about, I'm in the process of maybe thinking of submitting some stuff to Pathfinder Infinite. More details to come and all that. But I think it's a cool opportunity to be able to publish stuff on my own. I'm looking to kind of spread out my portfolio at the moment. So reaching out to other TTRPG developers and game systems to try to expand what I have experience with and trying to I guess put my mark out there. I said I run Pathfinder Society on the weekends in a little Discord channel. Other than that, like I'm just in the middle of figuring out where I want to go.
Yeah. Well, it's a big open world there now, especially as you mentioned with Pathfinder Infinite. I mean, that really allows you to get your stuff out there using the setting and information from the core book itself and within the existing system rather than having to create your own. So I think that makes it such a wonderful opportunity for authors. It's it's something I'm working on a project now, and most of the folks I know have already submitted stuff in there already. So
yeah, there are plenty of people who were as soon as Infinite was announced, were really quick on hopping on that train and getting stuff on there, which is awesome. There's some really really awesome content that's already out there, and I'm certain that there's going to be more to follow. But like you said, it's just a really good opportunity to get the chance to use the setting that like myself, I'm sure a lot of people love and would love to be able to do that without having to look over your shoulder. It's a really really cool opportunity, I think, and I think that anyone who's even remotely interested in doing something like that, it's you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? So if you want to write an adventure, you want to get a class out there, do it, and you never know what'll come from it, I think.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Ruve, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I had a really good time. Thanks for having me on here, John.